stand by. Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's IBM iSeries Nation Getting Started with WebSphere conference call. Today's call is being recorded. At this time, for opening remarks and introductions, I would like to turn the call over to your host, Mr. Kevin Larson. Please go ahead, sir.
Great. Thank you. Hi, everyone. Greetings again. Thank you for attending. This is week number 7 of the Getting Started with WebSphere on iSeries, series of iSeries Nation Citizens Chats. We really appreciate you you taking the time to listen to these chats. This is week number 7, and we have 1 week left after this. Today we're going to talk about getting started with web services. Web services are a platform and application independent way for applications to communicate, allowing you to integrate your applications across heterogeneous platforms and, of course, across businesses. Elena Lowry from our iSeries Solutions Enablement Team is going to be talking with you today about how to get started very quickly and easily with web services on your iSeries platform. Again, if you have any comments about this series in general, please feel free to forward me at kevlars, that's kevlars, at us.ibm.com. We always appreciate your feedback. And with that, I'll turn it over to Elena. Elena?
Thank you, Kevin. Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to this chat. I have quite a challenge today. I have about 1 hour to teach you how to get started with web services development and actually take your existing iSeries programs and convert them to web services. The good news is that I have done it a couple of times, and it's definitely possible to accomplish this task in 1 hour. Let me tell you a little bit about myself. I am a technical consultant in the Solutions Enablement Organization, and I work in Rochester, Minnesota. In my day-to-day job, I work with iSeries ISVs, and I help them implement various WebSphere and Java-related technologies on the iSeries platform. During today's chat, I will be using a presentation that you can download from the iSeries Nation website. And if you don't have the presentation yet, you can go to the website and look under Getting Started link. You will find a series of presentations, and this particular one, the first time we've done this was probably sometime last year, but I do see there is March 22nd date next to it. So we are now on page 2, which is agenda. I will start out with giving you a high-level overview of the web services. What are the business needs for web services? What kinds of business problems can you solve? Then we'll get a little bit deeper into the technology itself. What technologies make up the web services technology stack? And finally, we will talk about taking your existing iSeries applications, and in this particular example, it does say RPG, but keep in mind that COBOL applications can also be used, and we'll take a look at how you can take your existing iSeries applications and convert them to web services. We're now on page 3. Before we talk about web services, let's talk a little bit about the evolution of the web application. Maybe about 10 years ago, we started out with static web applications. These are your HTML applications that simply serve information, but you do not interact with them. Most of the applications that are available on the web today are dynamic web applications, and we use them on a day-to-day basis, whether we're looking up stock quotes or looking up weather or making travel reservations. All of those are examples of dynamic web applications. Now, the two latest developments in the web applications area are web services and portlet applications. So what do they add to the existing dynamic web applications that we have been using? Portlet applications are simply more advanced graphical user interface for an existing web application. So they're very similar in their look and in their function. They're very similar to dynamic web applications. Web services, on the other hand, are quite different. They share the name. You know, they have the word web in the definition of the technology, so they're using the internet infrastructure. But the goal and the implementation of the web service is quite different from the web applications that we are used to. Page 4. Let's take a closer look at how web services are different from regular web applications. Well, the one thing that they have in common with other web applications is that they are invoked over the Internet. Probably the most visible difference, or maybe invisible difference, is that web services do not have user interface. Your traditional web applications are meant for human consumption. So basically you would have an end user who would log in or who would use a browser to look up some information. Well, with web services, the web service is written for consumption by other programs, not for use by people. So the main goal of a web services is to provide program-to-program integration. Another thing that's different about web services is that they are self-contained. This means that it is not required to have any software on the client side in order to use the web service. Again, let's contrast it with a regular web application. In order for me to use a web application, I have to have a browser installed on my system. If I wanted to use a web service, I don't need to install anything because the technology itself is what's called self-contained. Web services are also self-describing, which means there is a technology in the web services technology stack that describes the web service interface. And for right now, we'll leave it at that, and when we get a little bit deeper in the technology discussion, that would make sense, but I wanted to point it out here. Okay, let's move on to the next slide. We're now on page 5, and we're going to be talking about service-oriented architecture. Almost every article or any red book that you read about web services, you will also find that service-oriented architecture is mentioned. And that's because web services are using this concept of service-oriented architecture in the implementation. This architecture, just like other new inventions in the computer industry over the years, it's trying to solve a problem. For example, object-oriented architecture has tried to solve a problem of modular programming, of reusing the code, making the code easier to maintain. That was the problem that object-oriented programming was trying to solve. Service-oriented architecture is trying to solve the problem of integrating different applications that may be written in different languages, on different platforms, in providing instant integration. This problem of integrating systems, it has been around for a long time, and there have been other technologies that have been trying to solve this problem. But all of these technologies had limitations. So finally, the computer industry came up with this new architecture that's helping us to solve this problem. The concept of a service in software architecture is not much different from the concept of a service in real life. So let's take a real life scenario. If I wanted to buy an airline ticket, most likely I would go through a travel agent. So I would provide some specific criteria to the travel agent. I want to travel on a certain date, and I may have a preference for an airline. Once I purchase the ticket, when it comes time to perform the service, it's the airline that will be performing the service. So airline is the service provider. When I get on the airplane, I really don't need to understand how the airplane works or at what speed and height we're flying. All I'm worried about is getting from point A to point B. So the same concept applies in software architecture, where we have a service provider that implements some business function, and we have a service requester that is interested in some business function, and they should be able to integrate, to work together quite instantly. And sometimes they may use a broker, another party, that would help them look up the service, that would help them allocate, or that will help find the service provider for a particular request. Okay, we're now on page 6. Let's talk about some of the benefits or a little bit more detail about service-oriented architecture. So I already mentioned the main idea of service-oriented architecture is to provide dynamic integration between a web service, which is simply an application that implements a business function, and a web service client. And a web service client is another application that has some kind of a business need. One of the key things to understand about web services is that they don't really describe what your business function should do. All they describe is this communication infrastructure between the web service or the service provider and a web service client or the service requester, and how they can talk together in order to provide instant integration. Web services are programming language and platform independent. This means that a web service can be written in virtually any programming language, and it can run on any operating system. And last thing that I would like to mention, when people see the picture of the service-oriented architecture and they see the broker component, in my real-life example, I use the travel agent, they think that, you know, it's something that's in the future. They think that that dynamic integration is not needed at this point of time. And that's probably true for the web services. Most of the web services that are implemented today, they're not using the broker. But that's where the vision for the future is, where there may be multiple service providers that will be publishing services to the broker. In my example, I use a travel agent. Like today, different airlines publish their fares to the travel agents, and so that the client has a choice of which service to use. But like I mentioned again, that interaction is not required. A web service can work directly, or a web service client can work directly with a web service without using the broker components. We're now on page 7, and it's really important, again, to understand that web services are trying to solve the interoperability problem. Some of the other technologies that have tried to solve this problem were CORBA and DCOM. And CORBA was a little bit complicated for most people, so it really didn't take off as much as the creators of the technology had hoped. And another example is Microsoft's DCOM. Also tried to solve the interoperability problem, but it only ran on the Windows platform. So this technology, web services, is platform language independent. I have some examples here. This is not a complete list, but as you can see here, our web service clients written in different programming languages can interact with web services that are written in a completely different programming languages. Okay. We are now on page 8. And here I have some examples of the web services. And you may be looking at this, of the examples, and thinking, you know, what's so special about them? I can look up stock quotes today or currency conversion rates or something else. I can look up all this information in a web application, or not even a web, maybe some kind of a other type of client-server application. And you're absolutely right. Web services implement the business function. So you may have web applications that are doing the same thing, but the thing that's different about them is they provide different infrastructure that makes them easy to implement with other applications. For example, if I had a web application that simply displays stock quotes, the only thing that I can do is I can look at this information through a web page. But I cannot integrate that stock quote information into my other applications. So I'm limited to the web browser user interface. If I implemented the stock quotes, the looking up stock quotes functionality through a web service, I can take that web service and integrate it with different types of application. I can integrate it with my iSeries application written in RPG. I can integrate it with a Visual Basic application. I can integrate it with a portlet application, with a web application. So it gives me choices, because the only thing that web service provides is this business function. It does not provide a user interface. Okay, the next thing we're going to do is talk about web services technology. So what does it take to implement a web service. And we'll start with a high level and then drill down into the implementation. We're now on page 10. On page 10, you have a chart that describes the web services technology stack. Notice that this is not just one programming language. It's actually a series of technologies here. And probably the best way to explain them is to organize them into layers. Web services, as you see here in this chart, most of the web services technologies have to do with the communication infrastructure of how do you package a web service message, how do you send a request, how does it travel. So let's take a closer look at all of these technologies and the part that they play in the web services interaction. Let's start with the transport layer. Remember the service-oriented architecture interaction where we had a web service client calling a web service. Well, that message, it has to travel over some layer, and this is what we call the transport layer. And as you probably have guessed, if the web services have the word web in it, it's traveling over the Internet. The protocol that's used most often in the Internet is HTTP. And the reason why this has been such a popular protocol for web services is because it has been around for quite some time. It's used for all of the web applications today, so it was very easy just to use this existing technology that's been implemented, that's stable, and now just pass a different kind of message over that protocol. Another important advantage of using HTTP is that it can travel through firewalls. And that's true for the companies that already serve some data that have port 80 open, the default port for HTTP applications. So if they wanted to integrate with external systems that are outside of their firewall, they can simply use the existing infrastructure. They don't have to open up additional ports, so they don't have to create more security hazards in their environment. They can just use the existing infrastructure. While HTTP is used quite often, it does have a limitation. HTTP is a synchronous protocol. It operates in the request-response mode. And if that's something that's not acceptable for the business requirements, you can use other transport protocols. For example, JMS, Java Messaging Service, that uses MQ, WebSphere MQ product. So you can use that product, or you just simply can use JMS to deposit a message, and that would provide asynchronous integration. So you don't have to wait for a response to come back, and that's more of a guaranteed delivery of the message. And also there are other protocols, for example, FTP or SMTP. They're not used quite as often, but there may be some business need for it. And so one of the things to understand here that web services is a specification. It's not any particular implementation. So when I thought about, you know, how can I really explain what specification means and the flexibility that it gives you, think of a recipe. You know, if you were to cook something, if you were to make a cake, you get a cookbook and you get a recipe. But the ingredients that you use, they're somewhat flexible. It doesn't say, your recipe doesn't say what brand of flour or sugar you have to use. It simply says use, you know, one cup of flour and one cup of sugar. Well, the same concept, kind of similar in the web services specification. It says this is what you need to do, but the technology that you pick for that, it's up to you. Okay, we're now on slide 12, and we're going to be talking about web services description layer. Now, remember I mentioned that web services were self-describing. This is where we're going to really spend a little bit more time understanding what that means. Some technologies in this web services technology stack are used at runtime, actually when the web service is invoked. So the transport layer that I just talked about is used at runtime because the message has to travel back and forth. This technology, web services description layer, is actually provided so for the use of integration at development time. So web services definition language is simply an XML dictionary or a set of XML tags that describe web service interface. A web service interface is a collection of methods, and if you look at a method definition, and if you're an RPG programmer, you're used to a term procedure. This method or procedure, they have input and output parameters. So that's what WSDL, or Web Service Definition Language, that's what that file describes. And also an important part of the WSDL document is information on how to invoke the service. And since web services are invoked over the web, the address of the web service is defined as a URL. So it's interesting, actually, if you look at a WSDL file and you look at the web service URL, it would look just like another URL of a web application. So the reason why this technology makes it easier to integrate different applications is because tools can use this WSDL file to automatically generate web services client code for you. So if I was developing a web service, and a lot of times when you develop a web service, you don't know what kind of web service clients would be using my application. It may be a Java web service client, it may be an RPG web service client, or a Visual Basic web service client. And as a web service developer, I don't need to worry about that information. The only thing that I would be required to do is create this WSDL file that will describe my web service. And the WSDL file is generated automatically by the tools when you're creating a web service. So as a developer, the only thing that I have to do is I have to hand over this file to the web service client developer. And the web service client developer, depending on which development environment that they use, they will most likely have the tools that will generate web service client code for them based on that XML document, on this WSDL document that you gave them. So that's why it makes the integration easier, because it's a standard that different tools understand, and they can generate code based on that. As I mentioned again, this technology, WSDL, it's not used at runtime by web services, but it simply is used to make integration easier. Okay, we're now onto the messaging layer, and I'm on page 13, and we're going to be talking about the technology, probably one of the most important technologies to understand in the web services technology stack. And this technology is called SOAP. And I don't even think it's an acronym anymore because it's just used the way it is now. SOAP is also a flavor of XML, and the main goal of SOAP is to package a remote procedure call to send it over the HTTP protocol. So let's take a closer look at how a web service client would create a message and how it would travel across over to web service and what would happen there. Again, this is one of the key things to understand in the flow from the web service client to the web service. So the first thing that will have to happen is the web service client will create a SOAP message. And the SOAP message is going to be an XML document that would have that will contain a remote procedure call. The remote procedure call would be a name of the method with some input parameter. The web service client will then send that SOAP message over the internet to some URL. So it would say, okay, take this XML message and send it to this URL. On the other side here, on the web service side, we have a component that's called SOAP server. Sounds really complicated, but all it is, most likely it's an application or a servlet that's running in an application server. So that component, it sits there and it simply listens to the messages that are coming in. So the SOAP server is going to receive the message, and now it needs to parse it. It needs to look at the content of the message to understand which web service to call. So once it determines that, it calls the web service. Now the web service needs to send the response message back. So it's going to have to package the SOAP message, send it back over the internet, back to the client. So it's important to understand how this message travels back and forth. But the good news is, when we're creating our RPG web services or almost in any other language, we don't have to write this SOAP messages from scratch. there are APIs that simplify that task for us. And as you will see, an example that I will give you, we don't actually have to write any code. At the same time, it is still important to understand what is happening in this interaction, somewhat for a little bit of performance implications, understanding that all your messages would have to be translated to XML and then have to be translated back to the implementation language, but also when you're designing your service-oriented architecture scenarios, it's important to understand how the messages are created and what's contained in the message. And if you remember, I made a distinction between the technologies that are used at runtime by web services and at design time. So this technology, the XML messaging, in the XML messaging layer, so it is used at runtime. Okay, and the last technology that we have here is our discovery layer, or what I refer to as broker. It stands for Universal Description, Discovery, and Integration. Quite often, it's called yellow pages or white pages, which is the term they use in the United States for a phone book. And so it simply contains information about all available services. This component it's not used by web service directly. A web service implementer can publish information about the web service to the registry so that web service clients can look it up. So it's not used directly in the interaction between a web service client and a web service, but it can be used to look up a web service or to publish a web service. And if you wanted to see what kind of services are published today, I provide the URL here. So if you're curious to see what people are doing with web services, you can go there. Okay. Now we're going to talk about actual development of the web service. Now that we understand the technologies that are involved in the web service development, and we are now on page 16. Notice I display back the web services technology stack. And one thing that I wanted to point out here, that there is nothing in the web services specification that talks about implementation. And that's not an oversight. It's meant to be that way because implementation can be so different depending on what you do. And hopefully that will be clearer for a minute. But again, all these technologies that are part of a web services specification, they have to do with the communication infrastructure. We're now on page 17, and these are just some of the examples of web applications that we can take and convert to web services. So we have a regular Java bean, an enterprise Java bean, an RPG application, SQL stored procedure, a C++ application. We can simply take all that business logic and convert it to a web service. The only requirement that you do have for the business applications for programming languages is that you do want that language to be able to process XML. And the main reason for that is SOAP, the technology that's used for sending messages across. It is an XML technology. So your programming language needs to be able to be able to parse that message in order to process it. And most languages are able to do that. If they're not, then you can build an additional layer. For example, if I have a COBOL program and maybe XML parsing in COBOL is not something that's very easy to do, I can add a Java wrapper for that program or a C wrapper for that program, and it will still allow me to use that COBOL program as a web service. On this picture on this diagram on the bottom, I'm just showing that business logic, you want to encapsulate the business logic first and then add a little bit of web services specific functionality in order for your web service client to be able to communicate with a web service. Okay, and we are now on page 18, and this is a little bit more detail on how you can take an existing RPG application and convert it to a web service. So the first thing that we need to do is make sure that an RPG application complies with certain requirements. The first, a really important thing, really simply, it should, the URPG program should not have any presentation logic. It should be in a form of the API. And if you think about it, it absolutely makes sense. Web services simply return some kind of data. So we don't want to be returning any user interface information back. If you wanted to, it can be an RPG story procedure. So you can implement your RPG program and then compile it as a story procedure. Another important thing that you want to implement in the RPG program is that it should be stateless. And that's not really the limitation. It's actually the nature of the web services interaction. And it has to do with your transfer protocol, with HTTP protocol. So when I make a call in the web world, when I make a request over the HTTP, once I make that one request, it's meant to return all the information. If I had to do a second request, my web service is not going to know that it's the same client coming in the second time. That's why you want to make that interaction stateless. If for some reason you wanted to maintain state, that's possible to do, but it's going to require a little bit more work. This is not a new concept. We have to do it with it in the web application programming today. In the web application programming, we use something that's called session. We do session management or cookies, which is a little bit older technology, to maintain information, to maintain the state as we're walking through a program. And maybe another way to maintain state, think about it when you make, let's say if you're purchasing something online, when you log in and you put some items in the shopping cart and then you have to check out. So adding items to the shopping cart and the checkout process, all of that requires that state is maintained because your service needs to know that it's the same client coming in and making the same request. All right, we are on to the next step, which is slide 19. Let's talk about what it would take, the high-level steps, and then I'll take you through the screenshots on how to do that, on how to take your RPG program and convert it to a web service. So the first thing we need to do is modify the RPG program to comply with the specified requirements. And maybe to give you another hint, what you want to do is you want to write an RPG ILE program that has procedures. And then if you wanted to, you can compile that program into a service program. That's not required, but it would result in better performance. So you have these procedures defined that have input and output parameters, and they simply return some information back. You pass some parameters in, and they return information back, whether it's simple information or a result set or a list of structures. So you can do any of that. Once we modify the RPG program, we then can use Program Call Wizard in WDSC, which stands for WebStory Development Studio Client for iSeries. It's a development tool. And we can use a wizard that it provides to create a Java web service wrapper. Now, why are we recommending to do this? It is possible to do web services in RPG without providing Java wrappers, but I have been working with web services for at least 4 years now, and I have worked with quite a few iSeries customers and business partners, and I have not seen anybody attempt that. And the main reason is that XML parsing is not very easy to do in RPG. And XML parsing in Java is done very easily, mostly because Java has a much larger developer community, and there are a lot of open source projects. Java developers just wrote the code to parse XML documents, and it's all free of use, and it's part of the J2E standard, so there's just a lot more available on that side. There are also tools in the WebSphere Studio that will automate that for you. So those things do not exist in RPG, which makes it a little bit more difficult to implement. In fact, in all these years, I have not seen anybody attempt to implement RPG web services without some kind of a wrapper. So the most The one that I have seen the most is the one that I'm telling you right now, is when they create Java wrappers. But it is also possible to create wrappers in C, so you don't have to use Java for that. Okay, so once we create a Java wrapper using a program called Wizard in Java, we can now take that Java bean that was generated and convert it to a web service. And so as you walk through this process, you don't have to write any Java code because the tools generate it all for you, and what you end up with is you end up with a Java bean that calls an RPG program, and that Java bean has been converted to a web service. So now let's take a closer look at how it's actually done. And I have some screenshots, and as I walk through them, I'll explain what you have to do here. You do have to provide some information here. So we're now on page 21. Again, the first step is to create program call Java bean that will call an RPG web service. This wizard is available in, as I mentioned, a WebSphere Development Studio client for iSeries. And you can invoke it by selecting File, New, and then you will expand the iSeries tab and select Java, and it's the only wizard available here. So if we simply select it and click Next, it brings us to the screen where we specify an RPG program, and you have two options here. Probably the easiest thing to do is to click this little Import PCML button in the left bottom corner. PCML is a program called Markup Language, and it's another XML technology for describing an iSeries program interface. And actually, if you want to use this method, but what you need to do is when you compile an RPG program, you need to specify an option to generate PCML. If you're using WebSphere Development Studio Client for iSeries, if you're using your Remote Systems Explorer, you can simply right-click and use your create, RPG module command, and if you click on the advanced option, you will scroll down and there will be an option to generate program interface. That's where you can specify the PCML option. So if you do that, you can simply click on that button, navigate to the file, and this wizard will display the program interface for you. So in this example, I have a program name and one parameter. If you don't have PCML, you can add that information by hand. So the first thing you would do is you'll navigate to the application, to your RPG application, and then you'll provide parameters and specify parameter type, whether it's character, pack decimal, and so on. And then you'll have to specify whether it's input or output parameter. Okay, after that, we simply click Next. And we specify some code generation options. We do need to provide Java package name, and in Java, it's simply a way to organize your Java programs. So we specify that information, and then you have two options here. You can generate program call bean for a Java application or for a web service. And all it's doing is generating a slightly different Java program interface based on the function that you want to implement. So in our case, we want to do web services, so we would select the web services checkbox. Okay, and then after we're done with the wizard, I'm now on page 24. And all I'm showing you here is the classes, Java classes, that are generated by the wizard. So the first little screenshot shows that there are four Java classes generated. And the one that has service in the name is the actual Java bean that we can convert to a web service. So the second picture here on this slide, I'm showing you the methods that were generated in this service class, and you will notice that there are two Java methods that perform the same function, but they have different signatures. Signatures in Java mean that they have different input and output parameters. So what you can do at this time is you can say, you know, I only need one of them, or you may want to have both of them, and different web service clients, it may be easier for them to use one method or the other. That's why the wizard generates those two methods for you, to provide flexibility. So at this time, you simply can review this code. You don't need to change it, but it's good to understand what the code is doing. I also think it's a very good learning technique if you're new to Java and you're just getting started. Look at the generated code and try to understand what it's doing. Okay, so once we have this Java being generated, the next thing we're going to do is use the web services wizard to convert this Java bean into a web service. So I'm now on page 26, and the way you would select the invoke the web service wizard, you would select File New Web Services, which will bring you up to this first screenshot that I have. And one of the things that make things a little bit easier for you is just more of a how to use the tool hint. If you select the generated program call bean, and then you select it before you invoke the web services wizard, a lot of the information will be pre-filled for you automatically. So I usually use that approach. Now notice here that under web service type, it will automatically select Java Bean web service for you, because we're using a Java Bean in this case. I usually check a couple of checkboxes here because we want to test the web service right here. I don't think they're selected by default, so I check the boxes here where I want to start it, I want to test it, and I want to generate a proxy. Now, a proxy is simply another Java class that will encapsulate a SOAP call. It is not required for a web service, and it's actually going to be used for by a web service client. But I usually generate it as more like of a sample code. So if I generate a proxy, I can package that Java class and send to the web service client developer, and he wouldn't have to write that code. It's already will be written for him. Okay, we're now on the next page, page 27. The next step of the wizard is where you can make a choice of the SOAP server. Now remember, SOAP server is the component that sits on the web service side and listens for SOAP messages. And this SOAP server will automatically be included for you in your web service project. You do have a choice of different web service of different SOAP servers here. My recommendation is that you just stay with the default that's pre-selected here. The other choices that you have in this tool is to choose the open source version of the SOAP server. It's called Apache Access Server, or the previous version of IBM SOAP Server, and I think they're mostly there for compatibility reasons. So this right here, it's called IBM WebSphere SOAP Server, is the version of the SOAP Server that has been modified and optimized for use in WebSphere application server. Okay, so in most cases, you'll just simply click Next on this screen. Now on page 28, this is where you can specify Java class name, and if you would have had highlighted it before you started this wizard, it would have been filled in for you already. But again, remember, what we're trying to convert to a web service here is the class that has the name services in it, one of the generated beans that was generated by the program called wizard. So again, we'll simply click Next on this screen. The next screen, we're now on page 29, is where you get to make a choice of which methods or procedures, if you're used to RPG terminology, you want to expose as a web service. What else is interesting on this screen? So the first field here is web service URI. It's basically the location of the web service. And notice that it automatically points to localhost because this is being generated on your system, and when you first test it, it will be using your built-in WebSphere test environment. And notice that you cannot change that at this point of time. So one of the things that you do want to make sure is when your web services definition language is generated, it's also listed on this page, it's going to list the location of the web service with localhost 9080. So what you want to do is, before you send off this document to web service client developers, you want to change that host and port to the host and port of the website or of the server where this service will be deployed. Okay, so again, we're developing a local host. Eventually, we're going to deploy it on the server, and you want to put in the host name and port of the server where you deployed it. That would be done after the code is generated and after you deployed it to the web service. Okay, so we reviewed the first few fields here. You don't need to make changes to the first three fields here, web service URI or WSDL file. The next area here, the next list, is the list of methods. By default, the web services wizard is going to display all the public methods in your Java application. Now, remember I mentioned in the program call wizard, you are going to get two methods per RPG procedure. Okay, so program call is calling RPG. So for every RPG procedure that you had an RPG module, an RPG application that you're planning to call from the program call bean, it's going to generate two methods with different signatures. So it's up to you what you want to do here. You may want to check both of them and say, okay, I want both of them to be exposed as a web service. Or you may want to use one of them. And by the way, the list here is going to be a lot longer because there are some other public methods. So one of the things that I usually do is I deselect all the methods, and then I just select one or two methods that I want to be exposed as a web service. We also have style in use here. Actually, what I have selected here is RPC literal, and at this time, I would recommend that you actually choose document literal as a web service communication style. And what that would provide is it will generate, the only thing that this is going to affect, is the way your WSDL document will be generated. So this simply, certain tools, especially remember, when this is all about integration, we don't know what kind of programming language or what kind of tool set we're integrating with. And the latest standard is that that tool support is something that's called document literal style of integration. So if you select that, then you have the chances that your WSDL document would be more compatible with other tools, with other web service client tools. So this has nothing to do with web service. It has to do with generation of your WSDL document. The next option here is to specify security. And I wanted to point out here that this is only for test purposes. Security is not a development task in web services. It's a configuration task in an application server. So if you select this option and you select some security option, it will pre-configure your test environment in Website Development Studio client to test some security. But when it comes time to deploy it on the server, you will have to configure that security on the server side as well. Okay, so at this point in time, you'll click the Finish button, and it will generate web services code for you. So let's take a look. We're now on page 30, and we'll take a look at what's being generated here. So you have Java code that's going to receive the SOAP message and process that message. And, of course, if you remember, our program called Bean is going to call the RPG program. You're going to get WSDL file. That's the XML file that will describe the web service interface. Remember in the beginning we checked some boxes and we got some test client, which is basically a set of JSPs, of Java Server Pages, that you can use to test your web service. And as soon as you click that finish, actually what would happen is your test environment will start up and you will see the web service and you can test it right away. So it's as you saw in this example, we simply went through two wizards and we didn't have to write any Java code in order to take our RPG program and make it a web service. Okay, we're now on page 31, and when it comes to deployment, there are basically three steps that you need to do. Web services are packaged just like regular web applications are packaged. They're packaged as an ER file, which is basically an enhanced version of a zip file. So what you would do is from your WebSphere Studio, you will export an ER file, and you will deploy it in a WebSphere application server. And there is no additional configuration that's required in WebSphere application server in order to use this web service. Okay. We're now on page 32, and I already mentioned this a couple of times. One of the main reasons you're developing web services is because you want to make other either other companies or other developers in your company make it easy to integrate with your web service. So if the development is done, you know, if, let's say you have a group of RPG programmers that are developing web services, and then maybe you have some people who are developing just the user interface, whether they're building portal or maybe they're building a thick client application. If you wanted them to integrate with your web service, all you need to do is send them the WSDL file. You don't need to send them your source code. You don't have to explain to them how the code works. You should simply send them that file, and they should have tools that would help them generate the code in order to invoke the web service that you have built. Okay, and we have just a couple more slides left. We're now done with the technology discussion. So the last thing I want to do is to reemphasize on how you may be using web services in your company to solve a particular problem. So the first one is that we have talked about is interoperability. We can write an application in any programming language and implement it with any other application. Some of the ways that I have seen it used was integration with external business partners. That was definitely one of them. Another one is I worked with companies that over the years have acquired multiple other companies. So they're now ended up with this portfolio of applications that are all written in different languages. So for them, they now converted all those applications into web services, and they can easily integrate together. The second business case is to take your existing applications and extend their functionality to the future. So, of course, if you're an iSeries customer, you may have some RPG or COBOL applications that you want to extend to the web or to other technologies, and web services is a good way to do that. And finally, you also may want to consider using web services for new application development because it gives you options. So you would start out with implementing your business logic. And as you saw in this example that I gave you, creating a web service is simply taking it through the wizard. So once I create a web service, I can take the same business logic and build different user interfaces for it. I can build a thick Java client, a web service, a portlet, all using the same business logic. And I also can expose that logic to my external partners or maybe other parts of the company. Okay, and the last slide here, it just gives you some of the customer references. This list is actually a lot bigger. I provided a URL. We're now on slide 34, where you can go and really see how companies are using this technology. I put quite a few banks here, and I thought this was a good sign that this technology is becoming more and more popular, mostly because financial institutions are very conservative, usually, when it comes to adoption of the new technology. They're not going to invest into something that's not stable and that's not going to stick around. They usually wait out for a little bit. So the fact that a lot of these banks are now using the technology is a good sign for web services. All right. If you wanted to learn more about web services, I'm now on page 35, resources. iSeries Developer Roadmap is IBM's strategy for taking your existing iSeries applications and converting or modernizing them, whatever that may mean for you. So one of the ways to modernize existing iSeries applications to convert them to web services. So you can go to this website and find web services information. There are online courses, red books, and other resources that are listed there. And my favorite resource right here is IBM DeveloperWorks Web Services Zone. This is where you can find information from very basic, why should I use web services, to very detailed implementation. Okay, and that is the end of my presentation. And I think before we get to questions, I'm going to turn it over to the conference leader for some evaluation information.
Thank you. And before taking your questions today, we'd like to conduct a brief electronic survey. To participate, please press the star key followed by the number on your telephone that corresponds to your choice. On a scale of 1 to 4, how valuable did you find Alina's chat? For very valuable, press star 1. For valuable, press star 2. For somewhat valuable, press star 3. Or for of no value, press star 4. Thank you. That does conclude today's survey. Thank you all for your participation. We'll now move on to taking your questions. If you do have a question at this time, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone. Once again, just press star 1 if you do have any questions at this time. We'll pause for just a moment. And Ms. Lowry, it appears we have no questions. I'll turn it back to you for any closing comments.
Okay, thank you very much for taking your time, and if you have any questions regarding web services, I believe my email is listed on the presentation, and you're welcome to send them to me. All right, thank you very much.
Thank you. That does conclude today's conference. Thank you, everyone, for joining.